Thank you very much. I have a very, I think, interesting presentation. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Voynich manuscript, and the title is The Voynich Manuscript as a Mesoamerican Herbal. The manuscript is the most famous and bizarre manuscript in the world. It has an undecipherable alphabet and a language. It has a tremendous web presence, lots of crazies on the web, but it is a very weird manuscript. It also is a herbal. There are 129 folios. A folio is a page with both sides that has 130 plants, full-size plants like below. We have Epomia, a Helianthus, Sacalium, and Anengium. So you can see the plants are very weird and bizarre. It also has what we call a pharma section, 18 pages, with 173 plants. These are extremely interesting because in the plants there are some names in this strange alphabet. Okay. There's what's called a baleological section, which interests me. There are all of these nude nymphs that are bathing, holding hands in vascular systems. Very strange, very weird. There are a cosmological section, and here are a whole series of zodiacs. The interesting about the zodiacs, they're surrounded by these nymphs, 30 per zodiac, and instead of the ordinary animals, they're Mesoamerican animals. So in Pisces has the alligator gar. Here's one, instead of a lion, it has a cougar. So it's Mesoamerican. Here's a picture of the sun and the stars. Here a picture of the moon, and the internal object we think is a planet, the planet Venus. Here is a recipe, probably, with stars. It's indecipherable, and it's a very strange alphabet. So it's a very strange manuscript. The paper has been dated to about 1400, but it could be a palimpsest, and so the age of the paper is not the age of the document. It could have been wiped out, as they often were, and later. But it's not older than 1420, and we think it's about 1560. Okay, here's an example of the writing. Very, very strange. These recipes, we think they're recipes, each has a star, probably curing some illness. Okay, what is the provenance of this? Well, in 1607, there's a name, Jacob de Tebenec, and died in 1622, and he was a chemist for Rudolf II. Rudolf II was the Holy Roman Empire, and we think Rudolf II owned the manuscript in his Kunsthammer, his collection of strange things. He's a very strange man. In 1639, a man named Barash, alchemist, in a letter writes about it. In 1665, a man named Marcy, the rector of Prague University, claims that Rudolf II purchased the manuscript for 600 ducats. But the manuscript was found in 1912 by a man named Wilfred Voynich, who was a book collector. Okay, he went to this a Jesuit college, and they were looking for money, so they were selling some of his manuscripts. He told them this manuscript was worthless, and he bought it from them, and he hoped to get very rich. He came to the United States. He tried to sell it for $160,000, which in 1930 was worth millions. He did not succeed. Eventually, when he died, his wife owned it. She didn't do anything with it. She willed it to her companion. And finally, it was sold to a book dealer named Hans Krauss. He couldn't sell it. And so he left it to Yale University. And now it is in the Yale University, the Beinecke Library, and it is a prized possession there. It is on the web, and it's available to everybody. Okay. Now, cryptographic analysis has been very extensive on this manuscript, and the great cryptologists of the world who translated the Enigma code have worked on it, and they have found out that it is a real language. It's not a hoax, but they have not been able to interpret it. So it's a real mystery. Many languages have been suggested, including Arabic, Chinese, classical Nahuatl, which is the Aztec language, gibberish, Hebrew, Italian, and so forth, but nobody has succeeded in translating it. There are many books, there are films, there are works of fiction. Of fiction is even a musical chamber work on this thing. And as I said, it has a worldwide web presence, and there are lots of crazy people trying to decipher it. If you go on the web, you'll find all kinds of work on this manuscript. Now, we have evidence that this is a Mesoamerican manuscript. How do we know this? Well, we know it on the basis of horticulture and botany. All the plants that we can identify are Mesoamerican. There are no old world plants in this manuscript. That doesn't mean to say some people see old world plants, but the people who have defined these plants have not been botanists. My co-worker is Tucker. He's the director of the herbarium at Delaware University, and he is an expert taxonomist, and he has identified many of these plants. There are many animals in this thing, in the zodiac and in scribbles in the manuscript, and all the animals are either indigenous to the New World or a few are Spanish introductions. There's one mineral, bolite, which is identified, and okay, that is found, and the quality that it is unique in Baja California, so in near Mesoamerica. The language symbols are similar to those of New Spain codices. New Spain was Mexico, okay, it was called New Spain by the Spanish. We have identified the Mexican cities, and there's a lot of Aztec symbolism, ritual bathing, and cosmology, which we will explain. First, let's look at the plants, folio one. Okay, and this plant has identified as Apomia arborensis, a plant very similar to what is found in one of the Aztec codices called the Batiatus Codex, but this apparently is a different species, which we recognize by the leaf. And we can see the roots, okay, with the little roots. By the way, this tree is not a small plant. It's a large arborescent tree. And, of course, here is, we think it is Apomia arborensis because of the leaves are chordate at the base. Okay, here's another plant which we identified as Viola. Very interesting. There are, Viola is mostly native to Europe, but this particular species is Viola bicolor, not Viola tricolor, and it is native to Mexico. And we can see that we can identify it, but it has these stipules, these long stipules, and where Viola tricolor, which is European, doesn't have these stipules. So here we have a plant that was only recently identified as an American plant in this manuscript. Okay, here is another plant, Passiflora, of the subgenus Tecaloba, and one of, here is we can identify the flower. And if we look at the red circle, the petioles have glands on them, and sure enough, oh, let me back up here, the plant here has petioles on the branch. So even though the drawings are quite bizarre, they are very detailed, and the guy who drew these looked very carefully at these plants. So the plant, these are just an example, are Americans. Here's another one that you will surely recognize as Helianthus, as sunflower, okay, and this was first identified by a botanist named O'Neill in 1940, and of course here is a picture of the sunflower. You see the similarity. And of course, in Sahagún, which is a famous work of Aztec plants, we can see the same plant. Okay, now how do we decipher this language? Well, if you look at the great decipherments, they're based on proper names coupled with surviving languages. So that is the technique. Okay, for example, Thomas Young and Campione, they deciphered Egyptian hieroglyphics based on the name of pharaohs coupled with a study of the Coptic language, and of course the great document was the Rosetta Stone. Okay, Bueno deciphered Sumerian cuneiform alphabet based on kings and links to ancient Persian. Okay, Ventris and Chadwick decipher Linear B with identification of Crete cities and links to ancient Greek. And Berlin deciphered Maya based on identification of cities and dynasties coupled with the Mayan dialects. But in our case, the Rosetta Stone are these plants, because in the pharma section there are names with these plants. Let me give an example. Here's a plant of, in the pharma section, that is Clelio puntia, okay? Prickly pear, the leaf that is being propagated, okay? And the name of prickly pear in Nahuatl, which is the Aztec language, is Nashtli, okay? Here's prickly pear. Here's another plant which we identify as agave, okay? Here is agave. And the name, the Spanish name from Taino is maguey, okay? Here we have the name in the letters of these Bornici script, and it's, we can, because we know the name is Nashtli, we can say that this backward S is an N, the O is pronounced ah, the little dash is a sh, this funny little symbol is a tla, and the Y is a Y, okay? And here we have another plant, maguey, and we have new symbols. The funny first symbol is an M, the O we've already translated, the next three, and the nine is a Y, so it fits nicely. On the basis of these Rosetta Stone on the plant names, we have deciphered the alphabet, Okay, so this is tentative. We think we're pretty right on one of them, and so we've been able to cipher the alphabet and to find out that we don't know exactly what the language is, but it's related to Nahuatl. There are a lot of Nahuatl cognates, and we think, of course, that maybe there were about 80 different languages in this, not the classical Nahuatl, but a lost dialect. So that is where we are at the present time. Okay, let us now look at the animals. These are sometimes scribbled on the pages. They're very whimsical and bizarre. The name on the left has been on the web, they call it a dragon, but it's not. It's very close to a Texas horned toad, clearly an American animal. This is not a snake, it's Dermorphis. It is an invertebrate. Here we have a frog, very close to a Mexican tree frog. Here we have a fish that is in the zodiac and is clearly an alligator gar, which is native to Texas and Mexico. Here are a desert ewe and a ram of bighorn sheep, which are American. Here we have an Andalusian red cow and a retinta bull, obviously brought in by the Spanish to the New World. These are the breeds that gave rise to the Texas Longhorn. This thing close to a Mexican dwarf crayfish. This animal, which is used as Leo in the zodiac, clearly is an ocelot, which is a Mesoamerican animal. And this animal, which is in the place of a crab, is a jacarundi. So we have Mexican animals just like we have Mexican plants. There's a whimsical drawing of this big fish eating a woman, and sure enough, these alligator gars get enormous, and very well, you could think that they would be consumed, could consume a woman. Another animal, an earless lizard, iguana, a paca, and a cotamundi, which are Mesoamerican animals. A jellyfish, of course, could be anything, but here's an armadillo. There's no way this is a European manuscript. You can recognize this as an armadillo, and there are 20 different species. We think this one doesn't show rings on it, and there are many species in Mexico that don't have these rings. This is an animal that's raced at the crested Caracara, and this is the famous eagle that you find, the symbol of Mexico, eating a snake on a cactus plant. And here is another example of a big sheep. So the plants and the animals are consistent with this being a Mesoamerican manuscript. Okay, we mentioned this mineral. Here is this really strange blue square, and it's very similar to bolite. And bolite comes in very good quantity in Baja California, so this is something that you would find in Mexico. But here is a mine that digs this bolite. Okay, this is another very strange page that caught my interest. It's made of six pages pasted together of cosmological symbols. You can't see very well, but in the northwest and the southeast corner, there is two pictures of a sun. Okay, they're in circle here, but you can't see them very well. When we rotate this in an east-west direction, it caught my eye that this is the symbol for Kabbalah, a Jewish mystical symbol that became very important in Christianity and entered Christianity and probably was brought in by the friars and monks, many of which were conversos, by the way, and brought them into the New World. So this is probably a Jewish symbolism of all things. And if we look again at this map, at this symbol, I've given to a theologian, and he says, you know, it looks like a map around the circle, and sure enough, there's this big circle in the middle called A, and we've identified that as a city that was established in 1530 in Mexico, called the Celestial City of Jerusalem. So we have a relationship with Jerusalem and the Kabbalah. And the cities around it, we think, are Hetzosingo, Tlaxcala, Tecamaco, and Veracruz. These were famous symbols. Why do we know this? Because there was a monk called Toribio of Benavente. When he came to Spain in 1524, the Mexicans looked at him and they said he looked like a poor one, Motilinia, and so he took this name for himself and he's now known as Motilinia, the poor one. And he established colleges where the descendants of the Aztec nobility were trained, and trained in Latin and Greek, and so there were people who could, or connected between the ancient Aztecs and the Spanish as well. And here's a picture of a monk lecturing to these students, and you can see he's pointing to paintings up there. So there's a connection between European paintings and the education of these Indians. Okay. Again, looking at these cities, here's one of them. And if we look very carefully, we can see that there's a volcano. Let me close this up here. So this is we call Sphere 2 of the manuscript. We can see that there's this famous fortified fortress, which was we know is as we can see is have these battlements. Okay, and here we find an aqueduct. See the aqueduct. Okay, the fortified battlements. And of course, we see this volcano. And sure enough, next to the city of Huitzilcingo is the famous Popocatépetl volcano. So this picture is clearly identified at this particular city. And what's more, if we look above the manuscript, we have this Fornici script. And based on our plant analysis, we can identify it as Huitzilcatl, which means willow. And sure enough, Huitzilcingo means willow, the place for willows. So we've been able to use our translation from the plans to identify a Mexican city. Here's another folio that we think is Tlaxcala. And by the way, when Motolini describes the city, he points to all these cities that are around. So these cities are explained by him. And sure enough, we have a fountain, and this is a plan of the city. We have a place for stores that we have. And then, of course, there is another volcano. And this is a volcano close by called La Malinche. And this area around Mexico City is full of volcanoes. In other words, Tecamalco, and we think that this is related to a monastery that's there, that there were great paintings, and we can see this symbol in the middle, which is, again, in the same paintings. And, of course, another volcano. You can see lower down with a big open chasm, and this is the famous largest volcano in Mexico, Pico de Orizaba, which is now it's dormant, but in that area it was active. Okay, and then finally, Veracruz, we can see this map. We can see these kind of chimneys, and sure enough, in the temple of the chimneys in Zempoala, we can see these temples. There is this a great big lake, and there is a famous lake in Veracruz. Okay, we have a name here, and the name we translate as water cellars. And wouldn't you know it, that water cellars is the nickname of Veracruz. So we have an identification with the city as well. And there is a lighthouse. And of course, Veracruz is on the Gulf, and so you would expect to find lighthouses there. This is the big city A, which we think is the celestial city of Jerusalem. We find lots of kibas or domes holding up a mantle of stars, which has relevance in the Bible to the mantle of stars. Sure enough, here is the city of Jerusalem, so surrounded by these domes, or kuba, as it's called. So there's a relationship between this and the cities. So all of a sudden, everything in this manuscript is beginning to make sense. Let us look again at the baleontological, these 562 naked nymphs. What are they doing? They seem to be holding hands. It seems to be the same woman. Obviously, this guy who drew this was enamored by the same blonde, chubby lady. And sure enough, if we look at the ancient murals in Mexico, there's one that shows where the pyramids are in Mexico. Underneath it, we can see people swimming in there. Okay, swimming was very important. And we see people in a daisy chain. They look very close to these women holding hands. So we think these naked ladies, naked nymphs, represent a symbolic system of the religion of the earth and the land. And sure enough, in the same thing, we find pictures of botanical gardens. And you need to know that the ancient Aztecs had great botanical medicine, great herbal medicine, and they had botanical gardens. It was a very advanced culture. And this clash between Cortes and the Mexico, which ruined the Aztec Empire, was a great loss for humanity. Unfortunately, the Mexicans burnt all the manuscripts, and very few of them remain. Okay, but and also they brought in smallpox, and so the combination of the dogs and the cannons and smallpox wiped out the Aztecs, a tremendous mega death. Okay, here are the ancient capital baths in Mexico City, and you can see some of these baths still remain. Here are other ones near Texcoco, which are baths. So we do know that the Aztecs were very clean. They bathed all the time. In contrast, the Mexicans were very dirty. They never bathed. The Indians complained that they smelled, and they thought it was dangerous debate. Anyway, so there was two different cultures, a clean one and a dirty one. Okay. Some of the cosmological symbols. Here we have a symbol of seven stars, which we know as the Pleiades. If any of you drive a Subaru, you'll notice that little symbol on the Subaru with seven stars. That is the Pleiades. And the Pleiades were very important in Aztec cosmology. Apparently, in a 54-year cycle, they would rise and fall in the sky, and at one point in 52 years, they'd be directly overhead. At that point, the Indians were very concerned that the world would come to an end. Okay, and so they had to sacrifice. They took a slave, they took out his heart, they burnt a fire in his chest, and they started all the fires over again. So this was very important. Okay, let me back off. Okay, they were very involved with the sun, and here are pictures. Pictures of the sun, and in the Florentine Codex, which is also a Mexican codex, we see the sun, we see the moon. Press the wrong one here. Okay, I got mixed up. Can you help me? I just got stuck. Okay, there. Thank you very much. Okay. And here's another symbol which we think is Venus. Venus was also very big in the Aztecs, and sure enough, this is from the Bavianus Codex, is a symbol of Venus very close. So there's a lot of symbolism of the cosmology of the Aztecs in this manuscript. Okay, what are the conclusions? First of all, the basic is the Voynich Codex is predominantly a New World herbal. Okay, we think it was done around 1560. Why 1560? Well, it mentions this ancient city of Jerusalem, and that was only started in 1530. By 1570, the Inquisition got into Mexico, and it was absolutely forbidden on penalty of death to have anything to do with Kabbalah. So this manuscript must be between 1530 and 1570, we think about 1560 or 1565. So the date is between 1530 and 1570. The best guess is 1565. The artist, the author, was a trilingual Latino mestizo trained in this College of Santa Cruz, okay, a college established by the Franciscan friars for sons of the Aztec nobility. So here was somebody who was probably related to the Aztecs, might have been a noble Aztec, but was brought up by the Franciscan friars, probably was lingual, probably interested in Spanish culture, Spanish art, and was in both possible worlds. Okay. The text is probably an extinct dialect of Nahuatl. Nahuatl is an ancient Aztec, but it isn't. We can't translate a lot of this, though there are many cognates, so this is what we're trying to do now, is to find out what language it was. If anyone here is a linguist in Mesoamerican manuscripts, please speak to me after this. Okay. We think this manuscript is very important. Why? A complete translation will make this one of the most valuable historical New World documents because it is by a native and is not filtered by the Spanish. So this is something that has consumed us, and it has interesting horticultural and botanical significance and important historical significance. And I thank you very much. I'll be glad to answer any questions. Questions?
Because of the connection to the Aztecs, was there maize or other plants that you'd expect?
No, interesting.
And why not if not maize?
Okay, well, first of all, we think this is a medicinal. Maize is not a medicinal material. But there are food manuscripts. There's cassava, okay. There's capsicum. So there are a few food plants. But that bothered us. Why would maize be there? That was important. We think this is a medicinal manuscript. And maize was not a medicinal. Oh, yeah, okay, yes. Yes. Any other questions or comments? Question.
I didn't ask, but I took a picture of almost every slide on there. I just ordered a reprint of the Voynich manuscript because I just found out about it.
Oh, yes, okay.
Will you make your PowerPoint available?
Yes, yes, I will, yes. And if you're interested, please write me. We've written a tremendous amount on this stuff. If you're really interested in this, I'll have you share it with our Dropbox. We're not sharing it to everybody because some of it is tentative and we want to put stuff that we're not sure about. But we have a lot of stuff on this. We have a lot of questions to be answered, and we're looking for people who find this fascinating. But if you have any interest in Mexico, in New Spain, in Mexican plants. You'll find this extremely interesting.
Just a comment. In Mexico, in south of Mexico, in places like Campeche, for example, in the rural area, there are people that just don't know.
Yes.
They try to speak Spanish, but...
Good point. There are 1 million people who speak Nahuatl in Mexico. So it is a living language. The other languages are dying out. Some languages only have 200 people or 50 people. But Nahuatl is a language. I've gone to the Nahuatl people, but you know what I found? It's very hard to go to experts and say, hey, I have something. I want you to look at my project. They downplay everything you do, and it's very difficult to get them interested. So I hope, is there anyone here who speaks Nahuatl? Anyone here from Mexico? Okay. But if you know anybody who's an expert in Nahuatl or these Mesoamerican languages, as I said, there are about 80 of them. So there are many of them, and they are related. We think this was a phonetic system, and so some of these languages are unclear. But we've been able to translate many of the plant names, a few of the cities, and some other cognates. But a lot of it is still mysterious to us, and we're working very hard on it.
Were they all herbs, or were there also tree crops?
There are many tree crops, yes. For instance, this Ipomia is a tree crop. It's a very big tree. So there are herbs and there are trees. There's a fern. There's one gymnosperm. Of the 370 plants, we've identified 50 of them. And we're writing a paper on this, and we're showing the plant from the vonage with the plant that we think it is putting together. It's quite amazing. They're very close. But again, the guy who drew this plant was not a traditional trained botanist. He was like an amateur, and the plants are very weird and bizarre. Question?
Any other manuscript in similar language has not decoded?
Yes. There's a famous codex called the Codex Cruz Batianus from 1555. It is herbal. It was found in the Vatican Library. I showed one plant that was familiar to it, so that's very close. Interesting, that's written in Latin. These people were trained in Latin, so the Aztecs were trained in Latin. And it's very sad to read these things. He says, we're just a poor Indian, we're very stupid, you know, but we're writing this. The guy who wrote this manuscript was Leonardo da Vinci. He really was a very interested trained person, interested in cosmology and culture, in plants and botany and medicine. So this is a manuscript like an Aztec Leonardo da Vinci. Question?
Yeah, just a comment about Nahuatl.
Yeah.
I think you can find some specialists in the National University of Mexico for sure.
Yes. Are you Mexican, sir?
Yes.
Yeah, well, if you come up to me, and maybe you know some names, because I think I need to go to Mexico to speak to these people, because I need to get them interested in this, because it's extremely interesting, and we've done a lot of work. We've investigated many of these codices. Many of the codices were written later, you know, in the 16th century. There was a great language, but it was a symbolic language. But eventually, when the Spanish came, they translated it into Spanish letters, and they're written. But yes, you're exactly right, and we must do that. Question. Yes.
That's going to be a long show for hard fight and watching
the. Sure, I can't hear you. Come up into the microphone.
Sorry. That's going to be a workshop for this group, a Herb, Spices, Medicinal Plant Working Group, tomorrow. So if you're interested, please come. I'm in charge of silent auction today. So if you're interested in all prints, you know, manuscript, stop by. Thanks.
Sure. Okay, thank you very much.